Hello and welcome to the Offside Rule Women's World Cup edition in association with Spotify. I'm Kate Borsay and lucky you. For the duration of the 2019 Women's World Cup, myself and a whole host of former Lionesses and women's football experts, we're going to be guiding you through the action in France right through to the final on Sunday the 7th of July. Well, alongside me today for this preview show, following her debut of dreams on the Offside Rule earlier this season, it's karate expert kickstarting us, do you get it? Into our preview, Robin Cowan.
It's the difficult second album. Hopefully I can follow it up.
I hope you're as good. The pressure's on. Also with Robin, someone who's played at two World Cups for the Lionesses, former Chelsea and West Ham defender Claire Rafferty.
Hello.
Hello, Raf. We're so pleased that you've both joined us. And of course, I'm looking to you for lots of expert opinion. I assume that you're going to pronounce all the names correctly.
No, that's your job, isn't it?
As we try and digest, so we're going to be taking the first three groups in this initial podcast. And of course, following it up tomorrow with another one with the remaining three groups. Well, of course, we're going to have lots to say on England and Scotland on this podcast, as well as dissecting all the other teams involved. Raf, this is a time that you're going to know well. England have arrived in France. They're there. I know you've been speaking to some of the Lionesses. What's the mood like?
Yeah, I mean, I think you sense the excitement. Suddenly it's here. It hit them. It's all real now. And yeah, I was speaking to Kaz and Carly and they're really kind of excited and ready to go and kind of put all the build up behind, and now it's full on focus.
You've retired. Obviously, that happened not that long ago. And we've got to congratulate you on this amazing career.
Thank you.
But of course, it means that you're not there. How does that feel for you personally?
It's quite bittersweet. It's nice to be able to kind of sit back and enjoy the buzz that's surrounding the whole tournament. But at the same time, you always kind of feel a sense of belonging to the team. And I'd like to think that I've helped pave the way for them and they can build on what we did in the 2015 World Cup.
Well, it's super exciting. It really is. We'll talk more about England on our next preview podcast. Robin, last time we spoke to you, you were getting to grips with Germany versus China. How's the research gone?
I was going to say that continues to be the case. I think I'm guessing there slowly, but yes, I'm really looking forward to doing my first game journey against China. It should be interesting.
I'm looking forward to you pronouncing all the names correctly. Since then, you've been at Hampden for Scotland, Jamaica. How good was Erin Cuthbert's goal?
Oh, absolutely amazing. I mean, we've just got to get used to it now, Erin Cuthbert, 20 years old, but she is an absolute star. And just generally, it was a fantastic game.
And actually, she's picking up plaudits from the likes of Phil Neville as well, the England manager, who told me that she was a superstar. He said she's so exciting to watch. So fair play to her. We're going to be seeing her, of course, play with that Scotland team. Well, remember, you're only going to be able to hear us on Spotify for this tournament. So make sure you're subscribed to keep up with our daily episodes from here on in. No premium account necessary, just enough phone space to have the app. That's all you need. Please let us know any questions you want answered by tweeting us at Offside Rule Pod. And of course, we're over on offsiderulepodcast.com, where you'll find match reports. You'll also find full team previews there as well, and interviews with some big name players and general musings from France, which we like.
Ils parlent tous comme des animaux, de toutes les chattes, ça parle mal. 2018, je sais pas ce qu'il te faut, mais je suis plus qu'un animal. J'ai vu que le rap est à la mode et qu'il mange mieux quand il est sale. Bah faudrait peut-être casser les codes d'une fille qui l'ouvre, ce serait normal.
All right, let's get into Group A. Here you'll find the host France, ranked fourth in the world, a country whose law allows you to be divorced if you smoke too much or are too interested in football. The latter being more concerning for me. That's us all done for then, ladies. Former champions Norway in Group A as well, officially the third happiest country in the world. Will they remain that way after the tournament in France? The incredibly defensive South Korea also feature in Group A. You can partake in their annual mud festival, apparently. Mm-hmm. If it rains in France, they'll throw rice at home. And Nigeria, Africa's most populated country, once head and shoulders above the competition of any other African team. Second largest producers of movies and in the world. This is a nice little bit of general knowledge for you. It's known as Nollywood.
Oh, nice.
200 movies a week are produced. I tried to find some women's football movies and I failed. Not quite sure how much that's got to do with football, but we will look now at France in depth. All eyes on them as one of the favourites. They've never gone beyond the semi-finals of the World Cup, and as hosts, they haven't played a competitive game, of course, in so long since the European Championships. What are our thoughts on France? Because they are a team full of exceptional players, but they've yet to produce that on the world stage.
Yeah, I mean, they're known as being the serial underachievers. They have such an array of talent, but they can't really seem to come together as one and really get past or get into them latter stages. You know, you've got the likes of Henri, Renard and Mbak at the back. They've got a real stem and kind of spine to their team. But the pressure is on for them, I think, this year.
It definitely is. Being hosts, I think they're all feeling a little bit more pressure. But it's going to be so interesting because, as you say, Raf, serial underachievers, they've not got past the quarterfinals their last four major tournaments, and they've got this star-studded team, and seven of their players play for Lyon, who are the absolute dominant force in women's football. So it's just how and when is it going to come together? It would be the perfect time for their coach Corinne Diacre to do that.
Corinne Diacre, of course, has that job of gelling that team together. And we caught up with Julien Laurent, French football journalist extraordinaire, or should I say journaliste. Julien is French. He gave us his take on France's coach and the side in general. Julien, tell us a bit about the French coach, Corinne Diacre.
It's a fascinating story, not only because she made history by becoming, you know, the first woman coach to coach in either the top flight or the second division in one of the big leagues. So she had 3 years at Clermont in the French second division, where she did extremely well. They finished seventh in the first season, 12th in the second season, and then seventh again in the third season, pretty much, you know, almost competing for going up into the French top flight, which was really good. I think she's really tough. She's always been, as a, when she was a player, you know, she still holds the record of the most caps for a French a woman player. She was a centre back. She was the captain. She was always a leader. But she's really tough. She's really demanding. And I think the men responded really well to that. In a way, she was ready for anything that could have thrown at her. The fact is, it's a very talented squad, and I think she was the perfect choice.
So how does she handle these superstar players? Because as individuals, they have some excellent quality there, star quality, Champions League winners. But how does she get them to gel as a team?
If you ask any of the girls now, like what's her main quality, or at least what she asked them the most and what's most striking about Jack, they would all say how rigorous she is. And I think maybe in the past that was something lacking. Yet in terms of integration, I think Jack's big job or biggest job had to be make sure that this French squad was not just the Lyon girls and then the others, but everyone into the same squad. We saw it with the young Marie-Antoinette Katoto, who is probably at 20, the biggest talent we have maybe in French women football. But yeah, maybe she was not ready to be part of a wider squad, a bigger squad like that. And that's why she's been left out, despite how talented she is and how great she's been in the French top flight this season with PSG. So I think unity in terms of squads and chemistry between the players has been huge for Diacre. And I think she had a lot of chat with Didier Deschamps, obviously the men's head coach, about that, about not just taking the 23 best players, but taking the 23 players who are going to make the best squads. And we'll have to see. Only the competition will tell us. Deschamps with the men last summer was very good at that. And I think Diacre has learned a lot from him with having a lot of discussion with him and also with some other leaders, that you don't win a World Cup if you're not a proper team and a proper unit.
It's the way that the nation approaches a tournament, particularly if you are the host as well. And I was reading that last week the French national team, women's team, were kicked out of Clairefontaine, which is their equivalent of St George's Park, their national training base, to make way for the men who had a friendly game.
How big is Clairefontaine?
Well,
it's not big enough for
exactly.
Two
I don't know whether they were just kicked out of certain rooms or certain facilities, or whether they had to leave the base entirely. The week before a World Cup that's been built up so much on your country, and France have made an effort, you know, trying to get female officials playing in Liga, etc. They sort of appear to be doing so much. But when those messages, when you kick out your women's team for the men's team, the opposite, by the way, of what's happened at St George's Park with the England teams, that's so harmful, isn't it?
I think that instantly contradicts the kind of message and the fight that we're all kind of part of. But it's about not just ticking the boxes and that kind of subtle language almost and behaviour and subconscious behaviour that we see day in, day out. That's the real fight. The kind of surface stuff is great, but it's that undertone that needs to change.
Well, can they provide on the world stage? Let's see. Journalist Claire Bloomfield caught up with Eugenie Le Sommer, one of their star players, that attacking midfielder. She can play up front as well, of course, to get her take on the tournament.
Now we prepare for a long time, like 1 year and a half with a new coach. We prepare well and we have good work at training. We work a lot tactically and we are ready now to beat every team. So we can beat every team, and you know, in World Cup there is detail to win a game. It's hard, but we have a lot of confidence.
How will you feel when you walk into the stadium for that very first game?
I think it will be a really amazing experience because all of fans for us, for France team, full stadium. It will be really exciting, and yeah, I can't wait for this moment. I don't know how I will feel because it will be a first time for me, but yeah, I will enjoy the moment.
Let's look at Norway, able to beat both Denmark and China earlier this year, but then fell to a 1-0 loss against New Zealand in April. That and their loss to Canada exposed serious gaps in their defence, really kind of simple mistakes being made there.
Yeah, I think, you know, ultimately you need a strong defence to be competing in these World Cups. To be able to beat the big teams, you need to solidify at the back. I think Norway will be really hoping to bounce back from their disappointing Euros. The manager has kept his job considering some uncomfortable performances. So I think they will give France probably the biggest test in that group. You know, they have the likes of Hansen, who's recently signed from Wolfsburg to Barcelona. She's a fantastic player, you know, with the ability to score goals and beat players. So I think she'll be the playmaker and one to watch.
What's quite interesting, though, is actually Norway's record against France in tournaments is actually very good. It's the 20th meeting, the fifth in a major tournament, and Norway are unbeaten in the last four against France. So actually, they've got a pretty good record. So I don't know if that will play into it. That might get into France's heads. I think Norway are a very interesting team. A lot of them play in the Norwegian league, which isn't professional. They've got a lot of the girls are from the same side, LSK, who completely dominate the league. So it's a little bit like France and Lyon on a smaller scale. So, yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see how Norway do, as Raf said, especially after that really dreadful tournament at the Euros. I think there will be a bit of pressure on them.
Well, France and Norway meeting each other in the second game of that group stage. Guro Reiten, if I've pronounced that correctly, Robin, tell us a little about her.
Well, she's just signed for Chelsea, so all eyes will be on her from an English perspective. She's got a ridiculous record in the Norwegian league. She's scored goals for fun in the last two seasons, which is why Emma Hayes clearly thinks that she can add something for Chelsea. She is the one to watch. I'm not sure if she's an out-and-out striker. I think she's more of an attacking midfielder. She will be the player to watch and the one that France will really have to keep an eye on.
She's also got some unorthodox pets, by the way. I've got a fantastic sheet of facts here. She owns lots of pet fish and three pet shrimps. There you go.
I'd
find it hard not to just eat them.
I was going to say,
personally.
Yeah.
The omission, or the absence, should I say, of Ada Hegerberg.
Well, it's been mentioned over and over again. And I think actually Martin Sjogren, the Norwegian manager, is now a little bit sick of it. He says, I've got to concentrate on the players who are there. But clearly, she is world class. And if you don't have a world class player in your team missing, that's a huge, huge gap. But they're used to it. They went through the whole of qualifying without her. They've played numerous games without her. So it's not like it's a new thing. They knew this was going to happen. So I think they're going to be used to it.
Does that damage the team, though, Raf?
I think sometimes when you take someone who's such a key player for the team and you remove them, you do see a team flourish around them and you find ways. You know, they've got talents elsewhere. They've got the likes of Hlovsen who has stepped in and is scoring goals for them. Ultimately, they need to be securing at the back first and foremost to go on through this group.
And you know very well about what could be their back too, don't you?
Yes, so Marion Mjolder and Maria Torresdottir. She's actually been out quite well with a concussion.
So both of them have had quite a lengthy time out this season, haven't they, for Chelsea?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a bit sporadic for them, but Marion, for me, is one of the most technically gifted players, very calm, really, really enjoy playing with her, you know, very confident on the ball, will always show, even if you're up against it. And Maria, equally, is one who will drive out the back. So them two will be looking to start the attacks and hopefully not conceding any.
Let's look briefly at South Korea, ranked 14 in the world, not to be ignored. One of the best defensive records in qualifying for France 2019 as they prepare to play in their second successive World Cup. So last time out, 2015, they were knocked out in the round of 16 stage by France. They're going to meet them again, of course. A couple of players of interest here, and I'll get you to pick up on this one, Raf. Chelsea's Ji So-yeon and Cho Sung-hyun for West Ham.
Yes, two very technically gifted players. Played a lot with Ji at Chelsea. For me, I'm going to put it out there, she is the best player in the world, I think. I've seen her grow as a player.
Because she's quite underrated on an international level. We don't, you know, we know that she's a superstar at Chelsea, but we don't pick up on her too much on an international level, which is surprising when you think that someone like Sam Kerr is picked up on so much.
I think that comes hand in hand with the expectation of the team. If Korea push on and do well, there'll be a lot more noise around her. But yeah, equally, Cho, she played the season at West Ham and they are very different players. Cho likes to sit a little bit deeper and dictate the play where G really likes to, you know, find that cutting edge ball and create. And, you know, I've seen her score free kicks from everywhere.
She's absolutely nuts because you see her, you know, very technically gifted too. You see her working away and then suddenly she produces a touch of magic and you wonder where it's come from. Yeah. Sometimes you can't quite work it out. It's just a moment of wonderfulness.
I think, you know, she can go a whole game without kind of being that noticeable. Then all of a sudden, you know, a touch will avoid about three players and she'll create an opportunity or score one herself. And yeah, we've seen time and time again for Chelsea that her ability to win a game, the coolness behind a persona, and she's just such a lovely girl as well. Both Cho and G are very, very like subtle, not in your face, and they're both very, very talented. I think G's the top goal scorer and Cho has the most appearances for Korea, so both of them are will be leading the way for them.
The question is for Korea, is that they've got these technically gifted creative players, but do they have a player to actually score goals? That's the question. No, they've got a very good defence, but that might be their downfall.
From G to At as well, Lee Min At, Raf.
Yeah, I think, you know, I read a few bits and G has said herself that there's quite a few young players coming through. Lee Min At has been compared to G and her abilities. I think playing both of them at the same time might be a struggle. And I know the coach has said it's a difficult one with the balance, but potentially if you have Cho sitting and Min At and G slightly more forward, I think that midfield will be one to avoid, I think.
I think for me, if they can continue developing their youth programme, which is so strong, actually, 2023 could hold better odds for them. They may, who knows, struggle to get out of the group. Let's go brief on Nigeria, the Super Falcons, being challenged, really, in African football by South Africa and Cameroon for the first time. So they don't hold that lofty position anymore. And when we talk Nigeria, we talk about such an exciting team. But all goals and nothing else?
Yeah, no, I think you're right. They're exciting to watch, but they leave the back door open, don't they? I think what's really impressive for them, though, they're the only African nation to qualify for every single World Cup. So they've got the pedigree. It's just, can they make it out of the group? I think they've done it once before. So it'll be a huge, huge, well, it'll be massive if they made out of this group. Incredible. I mean, I think they'll be the sort of so-called whipping boys, really, of this group, yeah. I think. It's very, very tough for them. But they've got some very exciting players. Asisat Oshoala is probably the one that most people would be most familiar with, former Liverpool and Arsenal. And she's just signed permanently for Barcelona after starring for them on loan. She's scored 7-7 in the league. And then she scored in the final of the Champions League. Obviously, they were already 4-0 down then, and Lyon were perhaps cruising. But it was an excellent goal. Mm-hmm. Really intelligent play, good run and a good finish as well. So hopefully she can kick on, and also going into the World Cup, the move to Barca might give her a big boost.
Is that then a player who we think's matured? Because she came and played for Liverpool and Arsenal here in the WSL and she struggled, really.
Yeah, I mean, she definitely struggled initially for Liverpool and finding a way. Obviously, culturally, I think it's very difficult for her. And then going on to Arsenal, I think for her, she's, you know, taken step by step and clearly progressed after kind of shooting into the limelight in the under-20 World Cup. But I think equally, you know, they've got a really tough challenge ahead of them. I'm glad England avoided that group, to be honest. But what I do want to say is the kit is absolutely lovely.
Oh, yeah.
I've got myself one because it's my favourite one, and I'm secretly cheering for Nigeria.
I want all of it. I've got to say, when they had the kit launches, I was like, I want that one, I want that one, I want that one. I really like the England away one. I'm going to get that one, the red one.
I like
one.
The England away, and I also like the France away kit. Yeah. I like a bit of polka dot, and I just think it's quite cool. Why not?
They all go with a nice little pair of jean shorts, you know.
Polka dot one. ones looks a bit like pyjamas
to me. Thank you, Robin.
But I still like it.
I'll be wearing those pyjamas in the studio here. Don't you worry. All right, going through from the group then, guys. Two words only, please, unless you say South Korea. Who's going through? Robin.
Boring France, Norway.
Rap.
France, Korea.
Oh, OK, good. All right, Group A, we're ready for you. Let's get straight on to Group B.
From the team who bring you the award-winning Totally Football Show comes the imaginatively titled Totally Nations League Show. Join us this June for this special series as we see who, out of England, the Netherlands, Switzerland and host Portugal, will pick up international football's newest trophy. The Totally Nations League Show, totally from Portugal, on Spotify and nowhere else. Subscribe and listen for free now.
Group B, home to double world champions Germany, who in turn is home to over 1,000 kinds of sausages. There we go, perhaps that's the secret. China, where 2,200 years ago, the game that later turned into football was invented. The world's first football was a leather ball filled with feathers and hair, and the game was called Su Chu, which literally means kicking ball. Not kicking a leather ball, but the official Adidas Connex 19 football retailing at £130. What is Spain? They're in the group. And their fun fact is, instead of the tooth fairy, they have a small mouse. That's the same as France, actually. France also have that mouse. And finally, South Africa, making their debut at the Women's World Cup, one of four teams to be doing so. OK, let's move on to Germany. Robin Cowan and Claire Rafferty. They remain a threat, don't they, Germany, despite a poor She Believes Cup tournament this year, where they lost to France and the USA. They were knocked out in the semi-finals in 2015. That was, of course, to England, who won that bronze medal place, and in the quarterfinals of the European Championships in 2017. But they remain number two in the world. So they have this huge legacy, which has enabled them to keep that ranking position. But is all good in the hood?
Well, I mean, we'll see. But I think the most important thing you said there was legacy and that winning mentality. And that's something that is installed in all of them, even though they've gone through a transition period. Gone are the days of, you know, Birgit Prinz and Behringer, real strong, dynamic Germans that we were all terrified of playing. It's totally changed now. But equally, they've got some fantastic talent coming through. You know, Marizan, I think she's just come back from a serious illness and managed to win a Champions League.
She had a pulmonary
embolism.
Embolism.
Like really serious. And she missed, I think, only 3 months and she was back and, you know, doing what she does
she's
on the
German
pitch.
She's a German machine.
Is that a blood clot for those who don't know?
I think it's something like that. Also, it feels like we've been talking about Marizan for ages, but she's still so young, which fries my brain because she's one of those players, of course, who has been out and out and, you know, stand out since a young age. They do have to contend, though, Germany, with this shifting around of coaches. Two managerial changes since the World Cup in 2015, Robin.
Yeah, it's most un-German-like because they usually have coaches forever. So, yeah, Sylvia Knight obviously had great success with them, so many European championships, and then she handed it over to Steffi Jones. It just didn't work with her, unfortunately. They had a terrible Euro 2017, knocked out by Denmark, who eventually went to the final, and they just looked like they'd lost their way a little bit. She kept her job after that, but they lost to Iceland in qualifying, and that was the final straw. So she got sacked, which is not something we see a lot in the women's game. You are given quite a lot of chances, especially because she's a former player as well. I think everyone was desperate to see her do well. And then it's slightly odd because they got a interim coach in, Horst Hubrecht, who guided them through qualifying, and he did very well. And I think what was funny was when he was asked whether he wanted a job permanently, he said, "My wife won't let me." So it was always the plan that he was going to be the interim coach. And they've got Martina Voss Tecklenburg, who's a former legend of a player for Germany, has won four European championships with them. But at the time, she was managing the Swiss national team. And she's got good coaching pedigree. She guided them to their first ever Euros and their first ever World Cup. She didn't quite manage to get them to this World Cup. They lost in the playoffs. So she's only had four friendlies in charge of Germany, but the early signs for them are it looks like they've got their swagger back.
So we think that they're a genuine contender, a genuine favourite and worthy of that number two position.
I think so. The only thing is because she's not been in charge for that long. But when you've got players like Marizan, I know we keep going on about her. Yeah. She looks like it's effortless,
yes,
doesn't she?
Yeah.
It's just I don't think I've seen her sweat. It's just completely just comes naturally to her. She's an unbelievable player. And if you've got a player like that in your team, anything's possible.
There have been a few changes to the roster, though. Anya Mittag missing, not a surprise. She announced her retirement in August 2017. So this is going to be Germany's first major tournament without their 158 cap forward. So that's a huge loss for them. As well as Marijan, is there anyone else who we need to be looking at as a source of reliable goals or perhaps absolutely defiant in defence for this side?
Alexandra Popp has been a force for quite a while, formidable striker. Equally, Lena McGill, a midfielder who, with Marijan, you know, the combinations, if they get that right, they really will be a force.
The goalkeeper, Alma Schutt, very important part to play. Although she struggled for form recently, she had a bout of measles last winter. This is not a good run of luck, is it, in terms of health for this German team? And Alexandra Popp, you'll be pleased to know, Raf, has just completed her three-year apprenticeship to become a zookeeper. As we know with this German team, thanks to their squad announcement, we know that they don't have balls, but we do know that they know how to play with them.
Aber weißt du was? Wir brauchen keine Eier. Wir haben Pferdeschwänze.
Wie bitte?
What? Nice.
Thank you very much, Germany. OK, moving on to China. Plenty of momentum to improve the women's game in China, but they're at least one cycle away, really, from being competitive. Robin, I'm just going to hand over to you because, of course, this is your early game to look at, Germany versus China. What are we looking out for here, briefly?
I think China, I watched their warm-up game, actually, against France, and they lost 2-1 to France. It was a second-string France team, but they did very well. Defensively, they don't look brilliant, but they've got a couple of very good flair players going forward. The main one that most people know is Shuang Wang, who signed for PSG ahead of last season. She had a very good first half of the season. I think the general consensus was that she just phased away a little bit, but she's a true inspiration. She's the only player in the squad not to play in the Chinese league. So I think she's inspired the other women that maybe they can move abroad and play professionally for a huge team like PSG. And she set up the goal against France. Beautiful through ball to Wang Shanshan, who is on fire at the moment. She's scored 23 goals in the last 24 internationals. Really potent. So she's one to look out for in terms of the top half of the pitch. The rest of it is a little bit underwhelming. But as long as you've got those two players, one creative, one who can put them away, they've got a chance. And I actually do think they may be tricky opponents for Germany.
Mm. Well, they've consistently reached the quarterfinal stages in each of their World Cup appearances. So one to look out for there. Spain, let's move on to them. So just playing in their second World Cup, all the momentum going ahead. I know that there's been a big social media campaign over in the countries. We've seen that record attendance, of course, with Barcelona and Atletico Madrid as well. So lots of buzz going on there. They finished last in their group 4 years ago, but were undefeated in qualifying this time round. Despite a loss and a goalless draw in their last three matches leading into this summer, the team remains upbeat on their chances in France. Claire, how do you like this Spain team? Because it feels to me like they're still a little in their infancy.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we were talking before, weren't we? They dominate possession so well, but they don't do a great deal with it. And that can be dangerous. A lot of possession without any end product is dangerous, especially when you need to be winning games. I'm not sure how they're going to stand up against the likes of Germany and China. I think they might struggle. We saw England play them recently, and yes, they dominated possession, but they didn't do a great deal else.
In terms of players, you watched them at the Euros, Robin. We've got ex-Arsenal midfielder Vicky Lasada being one of 10 from the Champions League finalist Barcelona named in that squad. So do we have a situation, although very different in terms of what the overall performance is going to be like, but do we have a similar situation with France where you've got this hothouse of players from a team like Barcelona? Of course, France, we're talking about Lyon, but you have this hothouse of players and not a lot else.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, yeah, it's almost a 50-50 split, isn't it? Barcelona and Atletico Madrid. So yeah, it's a really interesting one, and big job for Jorge Vida, really, the coach, who's the youngest coach, incidentally, at this tournament. I also think Barcelona were absolutely battered at the Champions League final. I know it was a while ago, but they looked devastated. So he's going to have to pick those players up after that. And as Raf said, I just hope they've become a bit more potent since I saw them at the Euros, because honestly, we were falling asleep at times. You know, keeping the ball, there's no doubt about their technical ability. They were just scared to lose it, almost scared to make that pass or have a shot at goal. So I just hope that we see a bit more incisiveness this time.
Finally, in Group B, let's look at South Africa. Their debutants ranked 49th, reaching their first ever World Cup in France this year. Although they are five times runners-up in the African Cup of Nations. What are we going to expect from this team, who actually we don't know a lot about, do we?
Yeah, exactly. Ultimately, I think they are a dark horse. We don't have a lot of information on them. There's not a lot of visibility amongst their players. There are a few standouts that I'm not even going to try and pronounce. But, you know, coach Desiree Ellis is a former national team player and the captain of the team. So she'll know what it takes to compete at the highest level. We did play them in 2011 in a friendly, and I remember them being quite unorganised, lacking in experience and lacking in a bit of technical depth. I'm sure they've come on leaps and bounds, and, you know, qualifying for this World Cup is a success in itself.
What do we know about one of their key players, Thembi Kgatlana?
Well, she plays out in America for Houston Dash. She's a very young, quick and exciting player, and we'll be hoping to get a few goals on her name.
So who's going through here from Group B then, ladies? Two names again, unless you say South Africa, you're allowed the extra word. Raf.
I think it will be, of course, Germany, not Spain, but China.
Yeah, I'm the same. I think Spain will just fall short. Although, actually, having said that, there's some third place teams can go through. So that, I think that might be a group where three go through, because 3 points may do it if they beat South Africa.
Well, the group kicks off on Saturday, 8th of June. Robin Cowan, of course, covering that game between Germany and China. Well, that's Group B done and dusted. Up next, you've got it. It's Group C. Let me tell you about Group C. We've got Brazil, runners-up in 2007. That seems insane now, by the way, but anyway. And where you can find more than 4,000 airports. With them, Australia, the Matildas. And get this, it's illegal to wear hot pink hot pants after midday on a Sunday. Really?
Totally agree with that. Absolutely. Should have that law here.
Okay, well, that's for all our good
then.
Take mine off then. Next up, it's Italy, who have suits sponsored by Emporio Armani. So definitely going to be the best dressed team arriving in France. And making up the rest of the group, it's Jamaica, who, like South Africa, are making their debut. And have Bob Marley's daughter to thank for making the team happen with her support. Brazil. Well, before we go into them too much, let's hear from Tim Stillman, Brazil writer for SambaFootch.com. He's given us this preview on the team.
Brazil come into this tournament in complete disarray, quite frankly. They've lost their last 9 consecutive games. And the reason for this is largely because there's a lot of disharmony behind the scenes. And it goes back to a couple of years ago. Brazil removed a quite unpopular manager in Vadão and replaced him with Emily Lima. And Emily Lima really was stitched up by the CBF, the Brazilian FA, and she wasn't given a very nice environment to work in. Assurances were made to her that weren't kept vis-a-vis friendlies and competitions, and she was sacked very quickly by the CBF, and Vadão was reinstated back in 2017. This was not a popular move in the squad for a number of reasons. Vadão had already managed Brazil for a couple of years and things had gone a little bit sour. This move caused a lot of the Brazil players to actually go on strike because they felt that Emily Lima was mistreated because she was a woman. And actually, I think those complaints have been borne out because Vadão has now lost 9 games in a row with Brazil and his position seemingly remains safe somehow. So what you've got is a team very, very low on morale at the moment, and they're not in good shape going into this World Cup. To sum up, don't be surprised if this World Cup proves to be a bit of a disaster for Brazil and they go out in the group stages.
Thanks very much to Tim there for his thoughts. Let's pick up on a little bit of it. So an injury doubt for Marta.
Yeah, and that's huge, isn't it? Because although she may not be at the peak of her powers anymore, she is the leader who they look to. She can produce something out of nothing. It looks like it's a race against time for her to be fit for the first game, and that'll be a huge loss, although I think they'll do as much as they can to get her on the pitch for at least a bit of that game.
She's not the only ageing player in that squad as well. 41 for Miga, the first player to play in 7 World Cups. That's incomprehensible.
What is she drinking? I want some of that. Yeah, I mean, what a player. Watched her recently play against Chelsea for PSG, and she just bossed the midfield. So calm on the ball. isn't as dynamic as she used to be, but she almost doesn't have to be because of her experience and her knowledge. She's always one step ahead. I'm sure she'll be a big player for them again.
Well, Christiane, also in the team, by the way, had a really unorthodox way of, I guess, training herself, teaching herself football when she was young. Everything was football to me, she said. She's been quoted, recalling how she'd chop off the heads of her dolls to play football with them. I don't know why you need headless dolls to play football, but apparently that was her thing. Raf, England beat Brazil, didn't they, at the 2012 Olympics?
Yeah. I mean, I think since then they really have kind of slipped down the level of dominance. They have an ageing team, and I think they haven't really, it seems like they haven't invested in the youth as much as they should have done. I know they did win the Copa America in 2018, but since then they really haven't kind of been on good form. And if you take away their key players, I don't think they're going to be that hard to beat.
OK, let's move on to Australia. Some special talent in the form of Sam Kerr and Caitlin Ford up top. Kerr's scored 12 goals for Australia since the start of 2018 and, insanely, 79 goals in her last 83 club matches. She plays over in Chicago. Behind her, Ford has been willing to do a lot of the dirty work as well. Sam Kerr, some say she really should have won the Ballon d'Or. She's that good a player.
Yeah, I mean, the stats speak for themselves, don't they? She's the record scorer in the National Women's Soccer League and in the W League in Australia. It's just incredible. And she scores all sorts of goals as well and has a pretty good celebration to boot. It makes me wince, though, because...
Do you reckon you can do that back?
Yeah, well, I could, but you'd have to call a hospital.
Not in your pink hot pants, though.
What about the style of play, Raf?
You know, they've got a new manager in, haven't they? There's kind of an upheaval there behind the scenes. I don't know quite what happened. But, you know, they will be trying to get Sam Kerr, Lisa Devanna, Caitlin Ford on the ball as much as possible. I think midfield-wise and defensively, they've had a few injuries at the back. So they'll need to, you know, switch and change and figure out sooner rather than later, because they did just lose, didn't they, against Holland in a friendly. So they did hemorrhage goals in that game. I think it was 3-0. So they'll need to secure at the back. They don't want to be too top heavy.
Mary Fowler, the youngest player at the tournament, will feature in that team. She's 16 years old and 23 days. And a player that you saw at West Ham.
Yeah, she actually came and trained with us for a few weeks. I don't know whether she was over on holiday, but I know there was I think there's a story behind that. I think because her brother plays for Ireland and they were thinking about what country they were going to play for. So I think she was over in the UK just having a feel for the style of play. But baby face for sure. I thought she was about 12, to be honest, when she came up. But I mean, she did stand her ground in training.
Let's move on to Italy. Could be one to watch, capable of producing a bit of skill, but still a relatively green team, Robin.
Yeah, I mean, it's their first World Cup in 20 years, which is quite interesting because you'd think Italy, well, actually the men's team hasn't been that great either recently, but it's quite an interesting development for Italy. The domestic league's obviously become a lot more prominent, a lot more competitive, a lot more money in it with the likes of Juventus and Fiorentina. Roma have got a team now, so they're pulling more money into the women's game in Italy, which I think has probably contributed to their qualification.
They've recently beaten Switzerland 3-1 in a friendly. Are we really expecting much from them, though, for this, Raf?
I think they might struggle in the group. They do have some fantastic players. You know, you've got Bonaceo plays for Juventus, having just won Serie A. You know, so they have winners in their team, and they do have quality. You know, and we've obviously seen English players like Enya Luko go and join Juventus. So there is strength in their league.
So there's a desire there, but is there a danger that if they don't do very well at this tournament, their balloon might somewhat be deflated, perhaps?
I think that's the case for most teams, unfortunately so.
All right, let's move on to Jamaica. Robin, you're at Hampden for the game against Scotland.
I heart Jamaica, honestly.
Loving Jamaica,
best.
Robin,
yeah, I was there at Hampden Park, record crowd for a women's game. There were loads of Jamaica fans, and I spoke to a few of them and said, oh yeah, we just came over and got some time off work to watch the girls in this warm-up game. It was absolutely incredible. And they, I think, have a really good chance of getting out the group, having seen them. Scotland, to be honest, the two goals they conceded, they didn't cover themselves in glory, a couple of defensive errors, but the goals were both scored by Khadija Shaw. And if you don't know her by now, you will by the end of this World Cup. She is phenomenal. Both goals, the composure she showed. So she's nearly 6 foot, so she's powerful, she's big, She has pace, but she's also intelligent. And as I say, the main thing I took from her goals was composure. The first one, she sent a couple of defenders for a hot dog and then just smashed it into the back of the net. The second one, she was through on goal. In those situations when I'm like that, I, you know, panic and put it into the stands, if lucky, if I don't swing and a miss. And she just waited for the goalkeeper to come out. As soon as the goalkeeper came towards her, she just dinked it over her. It was sensational. And she's been doing that for Jamaica the whole time. Top scorer in qualifying. And the other thing is she's just graduated from university in America, so she's a free agent. She is going to be hot property.
So eyes on Khadija Shaw, known as Bunny. Well, I listened to an interview with her a couple of months ago where she said, no, it's down to her buck teeth when she was younger. And it was a nickname from her brother.
And the carrot snubbing as well.
Yes. And it's just stuck ever since. She's got this insane backstory as well. And, you know, although we are here to talk about the football, it's impressive that for someone who's lost four brothers, I think three of them to gang violence, that she's able to have that composure and that maturity, I suppose, perhaps gained through that life experience. That makes for a very special player.
Oh, incredible. I mean, it's such a tragic life she's led already at such a young age. She went to college in America, and I think she was saying after all those tragic deaths of her family, maybe I should come home. But her parents and her family said, no, you've got to keep going, keep living your dream. That's what they would have wanted. It's totally inspiring.
Well, we caught up with women's football journalist Kieran Tavam, who's out in France at the moment, to get his assessment on this Jamaica team.
They've got some players that are really, I think, going to, can I say, light up this World Cup? Yeah, I think I will say light up this World Cup. The young player that they've got that most people will probably know about or have heard of is Khadija Shaw, more commonly known as Bunny Shaw. But what's also interesting about Jamaica is that they also have some players that are American-born that have kind of moved over to play for Jamaica. And I would look out for someone like Chayna Matthews, who's played for the Washington Spirit. They've got others as well, Havana Salon and Tiffany Cameron, a Canadian-born player. They've also got a young teenager, Jodie Brown, who's 17, and I know they have high hopes for her. But they're exciting. They like to attack, maybe a little bit more vulnerable on the defensive side, but got a good captain in Konya Plummer, who I had a chance to speak to recently when I was in Jamaica. So an exciting side, maybe lacking a little bit in experience, certainly in major tournaments. But I think they're definitely a team that could surprise a few people.
And where do you see them finishing in their group? What are your thoughts on that?
It's a hard group. You know, when you have Australia and Brazil, who are both ranked in the top 10, or certainly high up in the rankings, it's going to be very difficult for them to overcome those sides. And I don't think Italy are going to be easy either. They come into the tournament in good form. It wouldn't surprise me, unfortunately, if they finished bottom, but also it wouldn't surprise me if they get out of the group as well. As I said, I think there's an unpredictability to this Jamaica side. I've seen them a few times. I was out in Montego Bay a few months ago and they beat Chile in that match as well. So it's really difficult to kind of grasp exactly where they might finish. It wouldn't surprise me if they got out of the group. It really wouldn't. Maybe as one of the best third place finishers, but they really do have a tough ask in terms of trying to get out of that group.
Thanks very much to Kieran. Well, Jamaica are the first ever Caribbean team to ever qualify for a World Cup. So well done to them. But how are they going to fare? We know Robin's excited. Raf, who's going through from this group for you?
I'd love to say Jamaica just because of the kind of fairy tale behind it, but I think it will have to be Brazil and Australia.
I'm back in my reggae girls, Jamaica. They're going through with Australia.
So we're going to see Robin Cowan out in France, by the way, in full Jamaica kit, Robin?
Yellow's not a good colour on me, I'm going to be honest, but, you know, I'll
stop
try and
it.
Put it off.
Stop it, it's fine, it's fine. Okay, thanks very much, girls, for that look through the group stages. We can't go, of course, without talking about the Lionesses. Raf, how do you think the team's going to do?
The pressure's on, and, you know, I know there's been a...
Too much pressure?
I just think it's the norm now. I think moving forward, that's what England are going to have to deal with. It's different because, obviously, in the 2015 World Cup, we didn't really have any pressure on us, and people kind of wrote us off after we lost to France in the first game. So that's not always a bad thing, losing your first game. But, I mean, I think, you know, the Scotland is kind of a potential banana skin. I think they will do very well. And if they overcome that, England, I think they will go on and get to the latter stages for sure.
Well, we're going to be covering England and Scotland in depth in the next podcast. They did lose to New Zealand at the weekend in their final warm-up game. And there is a general air of does Phil Neville know his best team? Is he even going to use a best team because he's suggested that he might rotate the squad? There are concerns that the back four aren't yet set, and that's something that's been so prominent for the Lionesses. Raf, you know about this. You know, going out to Canada, you had that centre-back pairing of Steph Horton and Laura Bassett, and you, of course, came into play in Lucy Bronze for that tournament. But I have to say that there's a question mark for me over what's happening with the defence.
I think, you know, playing in defence for majority of my career, that kind of familiarity and solidity, it's so necessary. And the fact that it has been rotated, I understand that there's a deeper depth of talent, so it's possible to do it. But you have to draw a line at some stage and go, look, this is my back four, and we'll work around that. I think me, as you said, me, Lucy, Steph and Laura played 5 out of the 6 games. So we had an understanding. And each game we played, we grew and grew and grew together. And, you know, you can't be conceding goals in these tournaments. And that needs to be nailed down and has been a question point over the friendlies leading into it.
And are we even sure about the goalkeeper?
Well, that keeps changing as well. And that's really unusual throughout Canada. KB, Karen Barsley, she was there the whole time. And as much as I rate Carly Telford and I think she's good, and it's great to have a second option. By now, or as you get into the tournament, if that team still doesn't look like it's his number one, or we can't understand perhaps why he's playing the players where he's playing them, I think we are going to be concerned, aren't we? All right, well, one person watching that game was women's football journalist Rich Laverty. We caught up with him to get his thoughts on Phil Neville's team selection.
I think Phil obviously rotated the team quite a lot. He made 10 changes, which was interesting because he said he was kind of finished experimenting before the two friendlies. I think it was quite a good thing to use all the players. You know, it just obviously came across a bit odd after saying what he said. But the performance wasn't bad. You know, England created chances. It was just the lack of cutting edge that I think was a bit of a worry. And it's kind of been an issue now, probably going back to even Mark Sampson's time. But under Phil, we drew 0-0 at home to Wales. We've lost at home to Sweden, Canada, and now New Zealand, and not scored in any of those games. And I think that's quite a worry when you've got so many good strikers, you know, Ellen White, Nikita Paris, Tony Duggan, Beth Mead, Frank Kirby, and Jodie Taylor, who had a tough game but was Golden Boot winner the Euros. And the goals are not exactly flying in. And, you know, when you're coming up against Germany, France, USA, you're going to get even fewer chances and you're going to have to take them. So I think there's things to work on, certainly. England are a good team. They've got a chance of doing well out there. But I think the team selection and rotation is making it difficult to get players in cohesion with each other. It does look at times like there's not quite the understanding there between some of the players that there should be. Set pieces, we're still struggling defensively. But there are some good signs. We're passing the ball well. We're moving it well. We're playing a lot quicker football. I think you want tough games. England are going to have 3 of them in the groups, so it's going to be really interesting to see what happens over the next fortnight.
Thanks very much to Rich Laverty. There were some negative headlines after that New Zealand game, and it is a good point, really. We've had so much positive press about this England team. Perhaps the media have been too kind. Perhaps we're all too enthusiastic, Robin.
Well, I think that comes with the territory now, isn't it? People are taking the women's game more seriously, so they're going to be more honest. I think the players aren't going to be pandered to anymore, and if they play badly, they're going to be told. You know, as you've mentioned in a previous podcast, so many written journalists, press are going out to the World Cup who perhaps haven't really watched the women's game or been connoisseurs of the women's game for a while. They're going to be honest. So if England aren't very good, they're going to say it.
They're going to have to take it at face value. And that's no bad thing when we're talking about parity.
We've been crying out for that, haven't we?
Yes, absolutely. Well, that's it for part one of our Women's World Cup preview podcasts here exclusively on Spotify. Check back in tomorrow when we'll be talking England, Scotland, Netherlands, Canada, USA and everyone else in between. In the meantime, make sure that you're subscribed on Spotify, as that's the only place that you're going to find us. You can head over to our Twitter at OffsideRulePod and Instagram too to keep up to date with everything we're doing. Over on our website, OffsideRulePodcast.com, team by team previews, more on the Lionesses as they aim to pick up the mood like it's the day after sheep shearing season in New Zealand, and some key player interviews as we build up to the 7th of June. Raf, thank you very much. We're going to see you later on in the tournament. Robin, bon chance in France. Yes. I hope it goes well. Well, that's it from the Offside Rule World Cup edition in association with Spotify.
The Offside Rule is a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, email sales@muddyneesmedia.com.